A house is made of wood and stone, but only love can make a home. Welcome to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, helping you make your home into one you'll love even more. Here are your hosts, Dan Hansen and Betsy Thompson.
Well, good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday. And Betsy, I bet you noticed by now there's something different with the theme music. It's not toe-tapping goodness. It's a little bit creepy, isn't it?
Just a wee bit.
I've chosen this sinister soundtrack for segment four today.
Yes, I noticed, but you do realize that you might be overplaying it just a little bit.
Right. It's not a ghost story, but it's still really bizarre.
Yes, it's a very creepy topic, and we're going to call segment four, The Walls of Death.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes, and it's a historic look at a remarkably bizarre chapter in the world of decorating.
That's segment four, and it's going to be awesome.
Yes.
I promise you that.
It will be.
I hope it's awesome, because I just promised everybody.
It will be.
Somewhat less awesome is segment three, segment four's little brother that nobody really cares about.
That's sad.
No, segment three is going to be great. I don't want him to feel bad. It's going to be a segment where we give away that $50 gift certificate. So what's not to love about that? But before we get to all of that, we're right now in the studio with Bob Snowden from Snowden Builders in Granville. Now, Betsy and I first met Bob, several months ago when we were driving through Granville.
October-ish, I think. Yep.
Yeah, delivering invites to a designer event that we were having for architects. It was a color event put on by Benjamin Moore. And we happened to drive past Bob's office and we saw the sign, and we thought, who are they? Maybe we should stop and invite them. So we did, and we honestly had a crazy long discussion.
Yeah, it was a great conversation. A
lot of good stuff, and we decided we wanted to have Bob here.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Hey, no problem. Now, we want to talk about building homes and renovations and things like that, but before we do, everyone is out there seems to be a DIYer. You know, we all want to try to do it ourselves and we like to tackle projects and things like that. But at some point, we know that I can't build my own house and I cannot do this renovation on my own. How on earth do you go about finding a builder like you or any other builder? How do you pick one? I mean, there's so many people out there.
How do you make sure that you're getting a good one that you can work with?
Well, for one thing, I totally respect anybody attempting to do something themselves. I think less and less people are doing that today. I'm seeing more when I go into people's houses. I just look around and I don't see toolboxes. I don't see the things that you traditionally seen. So I totally get that, and I encourage people. Use me as a backup if you can't figure it out. But back to that question, if you are looking for a builder, I would look for somebody that, I mean, there's a list of things. There's certainly plenty of stuff on the internet. But I would look for as much of the person and the personality as I would their qualifications and their background. I mean, certainly you want to start out and make sure you get somebody that's licensed, insured. Those are very important, and a lot of it happens in remodeling jobs where they don't check that out. Even a smaller job can come back to.
Oh, so you're saying any job?
Absolutely.
That you bring, make sure that you're licensed, insured.
And, you know, I suppose anybody can give you a good sales pitch and tell you how wonderful they are, and it may or may not be true. I would talk to people that they've done jobs for. Go and look at the job, see the quality of work. I encourage people to go without me. I don't want to be around because I want the people that I did the job for to feel comfortable to say whatever it is about me, good or bad. If it's bad, I want to know, you know, what was it I did wrong or what could I do better the next time? But that's an important thing for somebody to talk directly with those people. People are not going to sugarcoat something.
Right.
They're going to be totally honest with them. And for one thing, you're not going to be around very long if you continue to do lousy work.
Well, I think one of the things that you just mentioned that's really important is actually following up on the references. Don't just assume that a sheet full of references mean that every single person there is going to give a glowing report.
Yeah. Well, it's also important to see how long they've been in business. I mean, I've been in business for 25 years, and I've done thousands of remodeling jobs and built hundreds of custom homes for people.
Sure.
So you're not going to be around very long if you're not
doing work.
Exactly. So I think it's important to find out how long somebody has been in business. Are they members of the AHBA? Mm-hmm. Is a good one. Better Business Bureau. Now more than ever, you've got all kinds of resources on the internet to find out. Usually, I think people are pretty quick to post stuff if mm-hmm. they had a bad experience with somebody.
Right.
And to my knowledge, it's pretty hard to get it off there once it's on.
And that's the thing. But one thing with those to be aware of, you know, as a person looking to hire a builder, just because you read a bad review, that doesn't necessarily mean everything you might think it mm-hmm. does just
that's
by looking
right.
at it.
It's very
because
true.
It could be somebody who just had a bad experience, maybe on their own account. And I've honestly, some of my best experiences have been hiring places that had a bad review, but then I read the solution, you know, how that company got involved and fixed the problem.
That's
and to
important.
Me, that is really important because I see everybody's going to have a bad experience from time to time. But if you can see a company that actually gets involved and fixes it, that's huge. So don't just put all the weight on a bad review. Look for other things, too.
Well, now, nobody goes on the internet and posts good experiences. They only go on there and post bad
stuff. Much more fun to write and read true. Bad experiences.
Yeah.
True.
But I do want to get back. What you said at the very beginning was the personality is just as important and how you're going to work together. Dig into that a little bit.
Well, I'm interviewing you as much as you're interviewing me when I'm talking to somebody. I do quite a few jobs for a company my size, and I'm looking for certain types of personalities that I'm going to get along with. I think it's just you're looking for a good fit. And
so
not,
as me hiring you, I'm looking for somebody that I can work with.
Exactly.
And you also are looking for somebody
same
you're
thing.
Going to work with because this is a long haul.
Well,
in some
it's
situations.
A relationship. I mean, building a new custom home is typically, we'll say, an 8-month relationship. An average house is probably around 6 months to build it. And there's a month before that and a month after that. So we'll just say, I mean, it could be as much as a year, depending on, you know, how long it takes to draw plans and stuff like that. Same thing with a remodeling job. And I think the remodeling is more of a, for lack of better words, an intimate relationship mm-hmm. because you're in that home working on that home while they're trying to live. You're trying to remodel their kitchen. They have to eat somewhere. They're getting in and out of it all day long. You're cleaning up their mess. You know,
so you're becoming part of their family
exactly.
is what you're telling us.
Yeah, it can be very challenging. And back to the personality part of it, if you have somebody in your home or somebody that you're spending time with to build that custom home that you don't get along with, or maybe they just don't have a great personality, maybe they're argumentative. I mean, I think it's as much importance to focus on that personality as it is their qualifications. And both are very important.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I understand, you know, exactly what you're talking about there because it's you know, it's so important to find somebody that can do the work mm-hmm. and can do quality work, but it's also so important to find somebody that you can work with through problems that arise or just being able to communicate what you're looking for.
Well, and just like you said back with the internet thing, it's not if you're going to have problems, it's when. And I don't mean major problems, but they might be, I would say the most common problem is lack of communication or misunderstandings. The builder will think he's supposed to provide one thing and maybe it wasn't communicated well enough. So it's how that gets resolved. I think is very important.
All right, Bob. Well, we have a bunch more questions that we want to make sure that we get to. So can you hang with us over the break and we'll come back with you and ask the rest of our questions?
Absolutely.
We'll be back with Bob Snowden after the break. Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, Betsy, I've got to say, I'm very excited about an upcoming segment, our fourth segment, The Walls of Death.
I am very excited.
It's a history segment.
It is.
It's very different, and people are going to be really wondering about this one.
Absolutely. It's very interesting, very intriguing, and a little bit of a head-scratcher, I have to say.
Definitely.
I was a little surprised by it.
You're going to wonder, what in the world? They were doing that?
Yes, that's exactly what I thought.
But let's not say anymore, because
no.
It's too cool.
So that's the fourth segment today, so you have to stay tuned for that. We're also going to be giving away that $50 gift certificate that we talked about on our last episode when we answered one of the absolutely fantastic questions that we received on Facebook over the past week. It's
right.
One I'm really excited about.
Nope, that's all ahead. But First, we're in the middle of a conversation with Bob Snowden from Snowden Builders. And Bob, I just want to get back to your point that you made at the end of the last segment or during the last segment about how important communication is in a project like this. Now, I understand everything you were talking about, how it's important to keep the lines of communication open, to make our builder aware of what we're thinking and all of that. That makes sense.
Right. But the deal is, there are some extremes to this communication. You know, there are really two sides. One side is very pushy and absolutely obnoxious, and they ask way, way, way too many questions. And the other side is, they don't ask questions at all. They just sit there. And, you know, we don't want to be too pushy or too silent and not ask enough questions. What are your suggestions for walking that very fine line between the two? At what point are we asking too many questions of our builder?
Well, for one thing, I would much rather deal with somebody who asks too many questions than somebody that doesn't ask enough, because I'm trying to understand what it is you want.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally I deal with people who just are not very good communicators. And I want to know where you're coming from, because it's going to cost both of us time and money if there is miscommunication or misunderstanding. So I like it. I can't say it doesn't get on my nerves sometimes.
Right.
Well, people sit there and ask you all these questions, because it does. But at least I know where you're coming from. But there are people, and that is just their personality. They're not real good communicators, and they don't want to talk about it.
Well,
and I really don't know. You're leaving it up to me to do my best at understanding what it is you're talking about or what you want.
Some of it is because we're afraid to be obnoxious. You know, you don't ask too many questions at the restaurant, because eventually somebody spits in your food, right? That's how it works. At least that's the...
You ask too many questions and your builder walks away and you're stuck with half a house.
Well, I think a bigger reason is people don't understand what it is they're talking about. They understand what they want to get out of a project, but they're afraid of sounding stupid. Or they don't really know how to ask the question, and I really don't care, because we'll get through it.
Mm-hmm.
But it usually starts out with that awkwardness, and they don't know what they're talking about. That's that's fine. I get that. But I would rather go through that awkwardness and get to, you know, what it is you want or don't want.
Now, that's something for all of us to take into consideration, no matter who we're hiring. You know, no matter what kind of contractor we're bringing into our homes to do whatever kind of work, whether they're doing our yard or whether they're helping us fix a kitchen or roofing or whatever. If you have confusion or concerns, voice them to your contractor. And a good contractor is going to work with you through that.
Well, and usually I will try and read the person up front and see flat out ask them, how do you like to communicate? Do you like texting? Do you like emails? Do you want a phone call? Do you want to meet on the job site? And I will adjust to however they like to communicate, but we must communicate on a regular basis. And a lot of times I will just send somebody an email or a text and say, you know, how's it going? Do you have any questions, concerns? And all of a sudden, then they'll come out with it. And it's like, well, geez, had I not asked, you wouldn't have told me that and I wouldn't have known. So
I can see that that's important, but I can also see that that's probably a bit of a juggling act for you, because I'm sure that all of that communication, you're trying to keep that open, but I'm not the only client you're working with.
I might have 10 different jobs going, and I have 10 different people that I'm trying to communicate with on a regular basis. But if it gets to the point where, as a builder, if you can't do that, then hire people.
Right.
And I do that. I have my daughter that works for me full time, and she is more more the communicator. So it just however you do it, make sure you're talking to these people constantly.
That's good input for everybody, whether you're a contractor listening, because we have plenty of contractors listening as well. It's a great business model. Just make sure the communication is happening. Now, we're talking with Bob Snowden from Snowden Builders on the Repco Light Home Improvement Show. And the next thing I guess I want to talk about before we wrap this all up is just your unique approach to building. You know, that was one of the things when we stopped by, we sat in your parking lot and we Googled you. And we found your website.
I did not know that.
And we're just reading about, you know.
We are not stalkers, by the way.
No,
that's fine if you are.
We're just good stalkers.
Right.
But anyway, we found that you adopted what you called on your website a woman-centered approach to building a house. And I guess I'd like you to just focus on that for a little bit here.
Well, I would say I really don't know the answer to this, why, but it seems like lately I am talking to the women, I would say 80 to 90% of the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The women seem to be the communicators in the job, which is fine with me. I'd really usually at the beginning of a job, one will stand out as the communicator. And usually I'll pick up on that. And that's the person that I just wind up talking to. It seems like in the past it was more traditionally the guys. And now it seems more like it's the women for whatever reason. I don't know. But that's fine. But I think traditionally also that builders tended to gear their conversations toward the guy. And that's probably the best way to offend a woman is to focus more on the guy. And the woman is, or women in general, are usually the driving force in purchasing a home, building a home, or remodeling a home.
Even decorating, painting. We see that in the store at Repco Light all the time.
Yeah.
You know, they drive what's going on. That's who's making the decisions in that regard?
Well, it makes more sense to me to focus more on that. And I do. And I it's not that I don't listen to the guy. I do. But I kind of already get what the guy is looking for. I want to know what it is, how that woman is thinking, what it is she wants out of it. That's important to me. And that's going to be, you know, whether or not the job is a success or not, as whether or not she's happy. And from my perspective, she's more likely to go on the internet. The guys don't typically do that. A woman will. And some of my best references are women that I have built homes for or done remodeling jobs. They love to talk about it. So,
well, it's a great approach. I like what you're doing there. And it makes so much sense because, like I said, we see that at the store all the time. We can talk to guys all we want about colors and what's happening in their homes.
Their eyes glaze over.
Yeah, you just see that glazed look on their face.
They see the vision. You know, the guy will get it when it's done. He'll understand the vision.
Oh, she was right.
Yeah, we're not dumb. We just, you know, we're happy where we're at. They're always looking ahead.
Yeah.
Bob, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, if they've got more questions about some of this stuff, or if they'd like to contact you and kind of see what you might be able to help them accomplish in their homes or in a new home, how do they best do that?
I would be more than happy to talk to you. You can contact me by email at bob@snowdenbuilders.com. You can go to my website, snowdenbuilders.com, or you can call me at 616-299-8455.
Excellent. Snowdenbuilders.com. Bob, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Now, when we come back, we're going to give away some money.
Woohoo!
Who doesn't like that?
Everybody loves that.
Everybody loves that, and somebody in particular is going to love it even more.
Yes.
To find out who, stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, Betsy, let's give away money.
Okay.
I like to do that. I feel like a big shot, like a big wheel, like a game show host.
Like Alex Trebek? He's a game show host.
Yes, I was thinking more like Monty Hall.
Oh.
I was thinking classics like Bob Barker.
Oh,
with the little skinny microphones.
Bob Barker.
The white hair, the distinguished
suit. Everyone loved him.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah. He's not deceased.
Well, no, but he doesn't do that show anymore.
No, Drew Carey does that show.
Yes.
But that's not important. The point is they gave away money.
Yes,
and
they
I get
did.
To feel like that, and I get to feel cool and important for the next 7 minutes or so.
So wow.
Let's get on with it. Let's give away the $50 gift certificate that we talked about last week.
Yeah, we asked, and man, did you guys reply. We got a fair amount of questions out there, and they were all really, really good
questions.
Yeah,
they were very good questions. It was tough to pick one because, honestly, we wanted to answer them all.
Well,
and in fact, we did
on
Facebook.
In due time, we may answer them all. So just because your question isn't answered right now doesn't mean you are not a winner. That means you have to tune in every week to see if we answered your
question.
Because
we're going to keep that post up and we're going to keep it going.
Yes.
As long as this show is on the air.
Yes.
Repcolite's president is rushing down now to, no, he's happy with this. It's fun. So we're going to keep that post up.
Yep.
You just go to Facebook as you have paint questions and ask them.
Yes.
We'll answer them on Facebook, but we will also answer some of them on air. And when we do,
yes,
that person's going to win a $50 gift certificate.
Right.
So today's winner
is Liz Trethway. Now, her question was about a half bath that she wants to wallpaper just one wall in. And she wants to know what the most important thing to do before she starts and what she needs to be doing while she's actually hanging the wallpaper.
The first thing, Liz, is to pick the right paper.
Yeah.
Now, in a half a bath, this is a much less serious question. In a full bath, you really need to take care because there are certain papers that have a vinyl coating on them.
Mm-hmm.
Those are going to be resistant to moisture and they're going to hold up much better in a bathroom area.
Right.
Other papers that are natural papers or grass cloth papers aren't going to hold up very well in a high moisture area.
Right.
So in a full bath, you got to be careful. In a half a bath, since there's not as much moisture to worry about, this isn't as big a deal unless you're papering behind the sink or somewhere where it's where splashing could occur.
Right.
If that's the case, again, you want to make sure you get that vinyl coated paper, something resistant to moisture.
Yep.
If you're not wallpapering that wall, you're pretty much open to anything.
Mm-hmm. Then you also need to be aware of the paste that you're using and make sure you get the right paste. All wallpaper is very specific on what type of paste if they require it. Some papers nowadays don't even require paste. It's just water that you spritz on. If you have any questions about what type of paste you should be using, ask us. We'll tell you. Usually there's instructions in the roll that will tell you exactly what type of paste.
Right. Just realize that's important. If you use the wrong one, there's the potential that the paper could never come off.
Right.
Or never go up.
Exactly.
So finding the right paste is very important. So make sure you ask if you have any questions at all.
Right. Now, the thing you need to do before you actually hang the paper is use something called a sizer. This is basically a wallpaper primer. If you've ever struggled to remove paper and all you've gotten are little postage stamp size pieces, that's because they didn't use a sizer. A sizer is going to help that paper come off more easily when you do want to take it off. It's also going to help the paper go up a little bit more easily because it's a little bit slippery and you can move the paper around once you get it up there. There's a little bit of play. So it actually helps you out.
Exactly. If you have a flat finish on the wall or a matte finish, you definitely want to use a sizer first.
Right.
If you've got a satin sheen on the walls, you might get by without. We'd still recommend the sizer.
Yeah.
It's just going to give you your best bet to getting the paper on as easily as possible and then later being able to remove it as easily as possible.
I always
when that time comes.
Use the sizer. There is never a wallpaper project that I don't use sizer. And it goes on really easily. It goes on just like any other painter primer would. Comes in white and clear. So be sure you put that on first.
We're answering a wallpaper question on the Repcolite Home Improvement Show today. And we've covered everything from choosing the right paper to choosing the right paste, all the way up to all the prep work that you need to do to make sure that the walls are ready for paper. Now that we've got all of that stuff out of the way, Betsy, what's next?
So now it's actually time to hang the paper. And when it comes to this, the very first thing you need to do is read the instructions before you even get started.
Exactly. Make sure you understand what you're expected to accomplish, what the manufacturer is recommending.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure it all makes sense to you. If it doesn't, give us a call.
Yeah, because there are things like reverse hang and stuff like that. You need to be clear on what all these little things are.
So that's the first thing when you're getting ready to hang the paper. The other thing is to make sure you've got a plan.
Yes.
And what we're talking about here is just making sure that the room is laid out in your mind. What you don't want is to start on one corner, work your way to the other side, and find you end up with a 1-inch strip that you've got to cut in order to make the paper fit into that area.
Right.
Find that out ahead of time and maybe change where you're starting so that you get nicer breaks.
Right. You also want to be sure that you have a level line wherever you're going to start so that you can run the paper right up against that. Usually it's a vertical line unless you happen to run the paper horizontally. But bad. You also don't want to assume that any corner is perfectly straight. So if I just start in the corner, it'll be fine, because usually they're not straight and you end up with your wallpaper tilted. So take the time, run that level line before you even begin.
Now, a lot of time you start in the middle of the wall.
I do, because then I end up going out to the edges and I don't end up with that funky little strip on either side. And depending on what I'm papering, sometimes I want to wrap those corners.
One last thing that I guess is just going to be a number of things thrown together very quickly. Work with a helper.
Yes.
Somebody who can bring you things when you need them.
Yes.
Your knife, a soda,
right.
You know, wipe the sweat from your brow, fan you if you're really hot when you're working.
Right.
All the things. Change the station on your radio when a song comes on that you don't like.
Oh, that's worth its weight in gold.
My children know what working with me is like.
Uh-huh.
It's all about that.
Right.
Dad, can I bring you the hammer? No. Get a different song on. Well, Dad, what do you want? Something by Tom Petty.
Yeah.
No, wait, Roy Orbison.
Uh-huh.
Wait.
And you can't make up your mind.
It drives them nuts. But get a helper. It makes everybody happier.
Yes.
Except the helper.
Exactly. Except the help. Also, gather all your tools together. Water, bucket, sponge, rags, smoother, and you should never forget a razor blade, but with extra blades as well, because I'm going to give you one last little tip here before we're done with wallpaper. Every single cut that you make when you're cutting your wallpaper up against the wall, you should snap a blade after that. If you don't snap a blade, then that's how you get those little frayed edges and the ones that tear and things like that. That's where people run into problems with wallpaper. After every cut, you should be snapping a clean blade.
And there you go, Liz. There's the long-winded answer to your very simple question about wallpaper. We'll be in touch with you via Facebook shortly to figure out the best way to get you your gift certificate. And everybody else out there who's asked questions, like I said at the beginning, we're going to be going back to that as long as the show is on the air.
Right.
And we're going to be drawing from there. So keep adding your questions, and who knows, next week or somewhere down the road, you could be the winner.
Now, when we come back, it's time for my favorite segment of the day, Walls of Death. You are not going to want to miss this. Stick around.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repco Light Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost. On News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, Betsy, it's historical segment time, and I'm excited.
So much.
Because this is something completely different than anything we've ever tried to do.
Yeah,
I think it's
a new thing for us.
It's a new thing.
Well,
it's going to be cool, though.
Oh, it's going to be very cool. I'm excited because I'm a history geek, and obviously I also love decorating, so my worlds are kind of colliding at this very moment. And I learned something new, which is always exciting to me. In the 19th century, or the Victorian era, wallpaper could actually kill you.
Right. It's crazy. And
yeah.
It's hard to really even wrap your brain around that, but it's true.
Yes.
It's true. This isn't just hype.
No,
this
I didn't know it till now.
See, for some reason, the decorating world has this dark, sinister underbelly.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand that.
Yeah,
it's
that we never thought about.
Mm-hmm. But think about it.
Yep.
Lead paint.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. That quit in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got uranium being used to create a bright orange pigment that was used in dinnerware.
So we've got
radioactive dinnerware.
Awesome.
Guess when we quit doing that? In the 70s.
Of course.
We always rag on the 70s for disco and, you know, what are those funky pants?
Bell bottoms.
We rag on the 70s, but man, they got rid of lead-based paint and uranium-laced dinnerware.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
Thank goodness for the 70s. Well, and the last thing, which is what we're actually going to talk about today, arsenic. They used in the 19th century to create the bright, vibrant colors that everyone wanted in pigments and dyes and things like that. And what's crazy is they use these things on clothing and candy, food, children's toys.
Arsenic on candy,
food,
and
children's
toys. Does
anyone see a problem with this?
Exactly. Now, what does that have to do with wallpaper? Well,
right.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that if they're putting it on candy, you know, they're going to run out of things.
And right.
We've got to put it somewhere. Wallpaper was the next logical option. So they start putting it on wallpaper.
Mm-hmm.
But something else that's interesting that happened right at the same time made the problem even worse. And that's progress.
Right. Now, originally, wallpaper was only in the homes of the rich because they were the only people who could afford it. It was made by hand with a block that someone stamped on a piece of paper.
Incredibly labor intensive, incredibly expensive.
Exactly.
But then in 1799, they develop a machine that can produce continuous rolls of wallpaper with printed color and
in
all of
color.
That. All of a sudden, the price drops and everybody can have it and everybody wanted it. it.
Yes.
Because in the Victorian era, they were clamoring to get rid of their plain walls and start putting some color up.
Right. They wanted these bright, vibrant colors. Now, there's a little bit of a problem with that because most of them had arsenic, but there was one specific color that everybody really wanted.
Right. It was super in.
Yes.
It was the in color. When somebody said, "Yo, Gertrude, what are you putting on your walls?" She would say, "I am putting on green."
Right. Well,
and what's the problem with green?
The problem with green is it has the most arsenic of all the colors. There were two specific colors that were the really bright, vibrant greens, and that was Scheele's green and Paris green. And unfortunately, almost all of the wallpaper of that time period had these greens in it.
Exactly. So you've got everything aligning for a problem. And it makes us wonder, what in the world was going on? How could nobody see this as a problem?
Right.
And yet, we got to understand, it was a crazy time.
Mm-hmm.
There were literally medications that people would take that included arsenic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They knew it was a poison. They were using it to kill mice and rats and things like that. They were using it to kill people.
Yes. They don't call it the inheritance powder for nothing.
Right. You want that estate. Your older brother just won't move on.
Uh-huh.
If you know what I'm saying? You just get a little inheritance powder and you speed things along.
Right.
They knew it.
Oh,
the thing is, they believed that it had to be ingested in large quantities in order to be lethal. Turns out, that's not necessarily the case.
No. Arsenic poisoning was actually noticed first in wallpaper in about the 1860s. Now, one of the earliest cases that was brought to the public's attention was of the Turner family. They lived in East London, and in April of 1862, they called on Dr. Thomas Orton to attend to their very, very gravely ill three-year-old.
Right. They had had three other children pass away over the course of 6 weeks.
Yes.
Now, these three children had been diagnosed by the attending physicians as having diphtheria.
Right.
Which was common at the time, very catchy.
Yes. Very
contagious.
Not like
a tune, but contagious. That's a better word. diphtheria. It just rolls, doesn't
right.
it?
Yes,
anyway,
it does.
So it was very contagious, and so there was a lot of concern. But there was a problem with that diagnosis, and that was that they didn't respond to the normal treatments.
Right.
And also nobody else got sick. So when the fourth child becomes gravely ill, the parents bring in another physician, a renowned physician.
Right.
And he instantly clues into that. Diphtheria might not be the cause.
Right.
So he starts making extensive notes.
Yeah.
And he chronicles this. We can read about it. We can go find these things.
Mm.
But he writes about how the home was cramped.
Yeah.
But it was clean, very clean. So he wasn't concerned about that. Sanitation, all of those things were good. In fact, the only thing in his notes that caused him concern was the brand new wallpapered room that was green.
Imagine that. Not really shocking. And at this point, in some medical circles, there was a theory that perhaps wallpaper with arsenic was, in fact, killing people. Now, this wasn't public, but in the medical circle.
They
were just
starting to toy with the idea.
Right.
Could arsenic on the walls be bad?
Right.
Hmm.
So he started to wonder. And when the three-year-old did eventually pass away about a month later, he thought that this seemed like a logical thing, that maybe the wallpaper was, in fact, the problem.
Right. So a postmortem was conducted, and sure enough, it turned out that arsenic poisoning was indeed the cause of death. Now, at the inquest, it gets suggested that it wasn't necessary to just eat the poison to be affected. In fact, some of the doctors started to claim that it might not even be necessary to sleep in the same room as the wallpapered room. Just being in the vicinity of that arsenic-laced paper could be enough.
Right. It's terrifying stuff, and we are talking about walls of death on the Repco Light Home Improvement Show.
Dramatic.
I know.
I wish people could have seen the clawing that you did with your hand. It's all curled in. And
well, that's because that's what it seems
very
like.
Very dramatic.
Yes.
It's impressive.
Yes. Now, I want to point out that this did not just happen in Europe and in England.
This wasn't just a their problem.
No.
This was an our problem, too.
And by our problem, I don't just mean the United States.
No,
I actually
Michigan.
Mean Michigan. Yeah,
right.
Unfortunately.
We had a case right around the same time as the Turner family, where a family in Michigan was poisoned by their sinister wallpaper.
Yeah. They didn't die. They were very ill. But they did discover that the wallpaper had faded by 50%. They brought in a scrap of brand new wallpaper that hadn't been hung. That was the same wallpaper. and the color was half of what it used to be, which means all of that dye that has arsenic in it had faded into the air and they had breathed it in.
Right. And so once they clued into that, the paper was removed.
Yes.
They came around. They recuperated. Yeah. They were fine.
Yeah.
So that's the happy ending to that story. Yeah. It's just interesting that all of this is happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain professionals that are starting to clue into what's going on.
Yeah.
Just the fact that they compared new paper to the old paper on the walls means somebody was thinking, because who otherwise is going to think to compare the wallpaper?
Exactly.
Well, you're sick. Let's look at your wallpaper.
Uh-huh.
No, it was starting to be an idea in the medical world. And they're starting to put two and two together. Now, one last interesting historical fact before we wrap this up is just a new theory that's, I guess I say new, but in the scope of history, it's new.
Yeah.
It's from about the 90s.
And the 1990s.
The 1990s, right. The idea is that Napoleon actually was poisoned by his wallpaper.
Right. Now, it's not necessarily what killed him. They did some studies. They took his hair, and he does, in fact, have
arsenic. Right. There was
arsenic.
A preserved lock of hair. Let's not let people think we've exhumed him to get to his hair.
Yeah.
There was a preserved lock, and also somebody visiting Napoleon the year before he died, so in 1820, some visitor steals a piece of paper from his wall, probably
through
their scrapbook.
Which is crazy. Right.
Well, so, I got paper from Napoleon's room. That's pretty cool.
Ooh, yay.
Unfortunately, it has arsenic.
Right. So they studied these things. Sure enough, obviously, the wallpaper has arsenic. His hair has lots of arsenic in it. And they... You can't say that that's what took care of him.
Some people will say that.
Some people
will.
But
we want to be a little more cautious and a little more realistic and say it was most likely a combination of all kinds of different things. He was sick.
Yes.
He was short.
Much like you.
Yeah, I know. I don't think that had anything to do with it.
No.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
Right.
But he was sick, and he was taking a weird concoction of all kinds of things to try to get better.
Right.
That combined with the arsenic on the walls... likely all work together for his
demise.
Exactly.
Right. Well, at any rate, once these concerns came to light and people realized that it was actually a significant problem, things started to change. The thing is, you know, arsenic poisoning affects everyone a little bit differently. Not everyone gets sick from it. It's going to hit the people who are already sick, the elderly and children first.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that you should keep printing wallpaper with these things.
So eventually they stopped doing that. And when did they stop doing that, Betsy? They stopped doing that in the 70s, the 1870s in this instance.
I was like,
but it was still the 70s. So no matter what century you're in, the bottom line of this whole segment is that the 70s rocked.
Right?
Yes,
the 70s did rock.
Now, one last thing. If you're interested in any of what we talked about, if any of that was interesting to you, there is a really cool historical opportunity for you.
Yeah.
In East Lansing.
If you're up for a road trip.
If you're up for a road trip.
Yep.
In East Lansing, there's a book. There were 100 copies of this book made originally in Michigan, and 4 of them still exist.
Yep.
One of them can be viewed by the public at MSU. And what the book is, it's called Shadows from the Walls of Death.
Yes.
Very exciting title. But it contains actual samples of the wallpapers that contained arsenic. A doctor compiled this book out of concern, and he wanted to kind of create a public service announcement for, in this instance, it was for Michigan, to let us know what kind of things are dangerous. This book can be viewed in the rare book collection at MSU, but don't worry, all the pages are encapsulated in plastic, so you're perfectly safe.
Yes, and if you don't want to make the road trip, we'll have a link in our show notes to a digitized copy of this. I have actually viewed it, and the wallpapers are really stunning. It's really worth a look.
It's worth a look. Check that out.
Yep.
You gotta love history.
I do love history.
And speaking of history, another episode of the Repcolite Home Improvement Show is history.
Aww.
We're preserving it now for future generations, and you can find it at repcolite.com. Check it out.
And while you're there, be sure to click the links on our homepage to follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
But whatever you do today, get out there and paint something. All the Repcolite and Port City Paint stores are nearby, wherever you are, and they're open until 3 o'clock. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Remember, if you're about to lose your DIY sanity, we can help you fix that crazy.
And help you make sure that every single roll of paper that you hang is completely and 100% arsenic free.
Well, thank goodness.
That's my promise. Thanks for listening.